The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line. Lots to chat about, lots to mull over. And whatever's on your mind, do get in touch. Text, email, call, WhatsApp, whatever you want to do. Obviously, that major examination into the culture of working in the Manx civil service promised by the Chief Minister will have repercussions after that 200-page tribunal report into the unfair dismissal of Dr. Rosalind Ransom. There is a period in which the government can appeal the decision. And also that 10-year strategy of attracting 500,000 visitors a year has been endorsed by Tim Wald. Dr. Allinson was on Man in Line earlier on this week talking about getting... Well, actually, it's not a straight 500,000. The 320,000 come anyway. So it's getting the extra 180,000 on top of what we already do. And how we're going to do it, whether we'll cope with it, whether they'll enjoy it when they get here, what it's going to look like when they get here, and will they be disciples for the Isle of Man when they leave? Everybody has an opinion on that, and love to hear yours. But Liz is first with us on Man in Line. Hi, Liz.
Good afternoon. I'm just inquiring, is there anybody on the island who regulates the profit that people are making in the shops? Some of the shops, their prices are absolutely, in comparison to elsewhere, they're about three or four times more expensive. You know, I was in Ireland at the beginning of April, and I usually buy 32 toilet rolls from a wholesaler on the island, and they charge £12.50. Now, the same toilet rolls were then in Holmenborg in Northern Ireland for £4.50. So that is a hell of a profit for one item, isn't it?
I don't think anybody does. I mean, the Office of Fair Trading looks at things like that, but they'll probably say it's down to the marketplace in that people will charge what people will pay.
But it's criminal. So it is that you can make sort of like £4.50 to £12.50 on just one item. You know, and that shop that was selling it at £4.50, which was Home and Bargains, whatever it was in Northern Ireland, they were making a profit at that.
Interesting. Probably that's why everybody's, lots of people certainly, are turning to buying stuff online.
Well, that is it. And they're shooting themselves in the foot because nobody's going to go into the shops when they're making such profits. And this, the price of petrol, yet and all, I heard on the radio the other week that they were, was it Shell or somebody, that were making $7 billion profit? How can they be allowed to do such a thing?
Well, that is worldwide, though, isn't it?
I don't know. I just think it's one rule for one and one rule for the other. I mean, how people can sleep at night when they take advantage of the ordinary working person by charging so much extra for products, it is beyond me. Even I like a jar of Bovril, and I went and recently has jumped up in £1, has jumped up £1 in price in one go. You know, that is a lot, really, so it is. I mean, you don't mind 10 pence, 20 pence, but £1 a go?
Interesting, Liz. But do you remember, I think we've all got used to low inflation. Do you remember years ago, inflation, we always used to worry about inflation, and it seems like for the past 10 years, nobody, apart from people who've got lots of savings, nobody's worried about inflation for the past 10 years. And now suddenly, it's come back into the fore, and inflation... And the cost of living is something that's going to preoccupy everybody.
Well, I know when I first bought my first house, I think I got it at 10% and the interest rate. And this was a government mortgage I had, and it jumped up to about 14%, so it did, really. That was in the 83, that was. You know, inflation was high then, so it was.
And how much was your first house, Liz?
18,000.
There you are.
A five-bedroom house in the centre of Castletown.
Wouldn't buy you a decent car now, Liz.
It wouldn't. And I mean, what they're making cars out of these days, you just lean on it and it dents. It's not made out of, for what they're looking for cars, you just press it and it goes in like nobody's business. It's not made of something that's substantial. You know, if you had a crash, you've had it. You're squashed.
All right, Liz, thanks for calling. I hope you got enough. As long as you've got enough loo rolls, that's the important thing.
I have, but I shouldn't be paying three times more than what the cost.
All right, thanks for calling, Liz. Howard's with us on Man in Line now. Hi, Howard.
Hello, Andy. That lady about the cars being made of soft materials, a lot of that is down to crash, properties. I had a Renault Laguna, and the wings and the bonnet at the front were all plastic, but that's all part and parcel of preventing serious injuries.
Well, it's fair to say cars are a lot safer than they used to be, aren't they?
They are that, yeah, certainly. I was just reading yesterday's Examiner, and another farce has come about. And now the man that's writing or being asked about this, Captain Bridgeson, I know Steve, and he is a first-class captain, pilot. He worked many years with Manx Airlines, etc., through the system. And he's in and out of Runswick Airport more times than I've had hot dinners, so he knows what he's doing. But, as quite rightly, they said they have difficulty landing in adverse conditions, and that is because of the approach lights. And according to the paper, when they extended the runway, done some work on the runway, they'd done away what was approach lights coming in, so they then had a different system to apply on being able to land an aircraft safely in bad conditions. Now, on the other hand, we've got Dr. Allenson sitting in another chamber saying that we're going to get, hopefully, 500,000 people in and out every day, or every year, visitors. But if you haven't got a safe airport, which we're supposed to have, because it's not controlled by the, indirectly, by the people working at the airport, it's controlled by the sort of civil aviation, and they dictate the terms of what category you can work under. And if this airport in Ronaldsway is not working to a suitable category, they can then restrict the size of the aircraft that can use it, which could kind of put a dent in Dr. Allenson's idea of 500,000 people a year.
It depends which aircraft they're aiming to get in, and presumably that's also alongside the boat. But, I've heard all sorts of tales about the airport, whether or not the EasyJet planes are just too big, or their model for bringing in, it's just too big, and the airport can't cope with a couple of those at a time.
When I worked down at the airport, I'm saying it's a while ago, the airport could accommodate safely, and has done, have refueled a 757, and that's the largest aircraft. Now, it's much bigger than a 737. But they didn't come in too often, but it's when they were doing the direct flights to various parts of the Mediterranean and such. Several times they brought a 757 in, and it was, for the Isle of Man, a big lump of an aircraft. So the Airbus 320s, 319s, and the Boeings, if they wanted to come in, they are more than capable of landing at the airport here. But they've got to have the equipment to do it. When you're 200 feet up there, and that's the last time you say, yes, I'm going to go, or I'm not allowed to go, then they're on but on a very dubious path. And if the weather is adverse and things are not working down there, this should be a priority. Get those lights fitted. They took some away, as they say, when they extended out and put that runway extension, etc. There used to be a, and I haven't been down there for a while, I have to admit, but there used to be a steel jetty going out to sea with approach lights on it. And that when they put the extension on, I don't know whether that was removed or it wasn't. But as Paul Quine said at the last election, when they were going round, they'd spent serious millions of pounds down there widening a certain part of the runway, putting various other bits and pieces. I don't know, it was something like $9 million. And they got all that done, and there's no lights for the aircraft to, you know, in bad weather to land. How farcical is that?
And they've got new fire engines as well.
Well, again, they are necessary. It's they've got three. The island, the airport, only needs to operate properly two. But being an island, if one breaks down, then that would put severe restrictions on what can come in and go out. So the sensible option to that, because you can't just go and magic one up. In the UK, you could possibly borrow one from another airfield temporarily. But being an island, you've got to have the proper equipment.
Well, they've appointed a new airport director. As yet, they've not told us who it is. But that'll be... They've got lots of stuff to deal with when they get into the job.
Well, they're given something here in the paper. Does the name Taylor, does that ring a bell? But it doesn't matter who does it, who's there, provided they know what they're doing and they get their priorities right. Now, this is coming from the DOI again, because that was all under the auspices of the DOI. And this is another one of the, pardon the term, cock-up. And no wonder they're bailing out like RATs of the Titanic. They're going left, right and centre, and they know this is going to cause serious problems all through the system. But just had a lighter note to things. On the same page, on page 2 in the Examiner, heavy goods vehicle crash shuts the road. Well, that's down to Ferry Bridge. Obviously, he never said hello. But it looks very much like the vehicle, the English vehicle, has been over painting the lines around the island. And this thing had to be hauled out from behind the wall at the Ferry Bridge. And has that put paid to the DOI painting their white lines for a long while?
That's another one on Mr. Crookall's desk. All right.
It's all on the page here, and the liquor license reforms are on the way. It's a question I've asked quite a few times and never got any answers. The licensing people, the brewery, etc., I don't know whether that's because I very rarely go into a pub, but they want to reduce the optic size from 1 fluid ounce, which has been all my life the measure for the Isle of Man, down to 25 millilitres, which is something like 16% smaller.
Is that so?
Yes. And they're saying they have great difficulty in obtaining optics of the 1 fluid ounce size for the Isle of Man. This has been going on for several years. And if you reduce that down, that means every place which sells alcohol will have to have the new 25 milliliter optic glasses as opposed to the 1 fluid ounce. So for your money that you're paying over the bar to get a spirit drink, you'll be getting considerably less. And if that goes through, it'll sneak it through on the quiet. And I asked the Office of Fair Trading, oh, well, it's not in our remit, the standard answer.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I mean, what is in their remit? They police the optic size and things like that.
Yeah, so the trading standards used to do the petrols, etc. They measured out the pumps and they sealed it. And the same with the delivery vehicles. In all petroleum spirits, when they used to deliver around the houses, etc., for oils, for heating oil, those are checked twice a year. The meters are calibrated and sealed. So they're not open to abuse in that sense. But if they reduce this optic size down, every man jack that goes in to get a drink in the spirits, on the optics, hotels, cafes, restaurants, pubs, nightclubs, anything, they're going to get considerably less than what they're getting today, if it hasn't already been reduced.
Okay. All right, Howard, thanks for calling today.
Okay, bye now.
All right, good to talk to you, and as well as a man, Jacko, a woman and Jacqueline as well. Doug's with us now. Hi, Doug.
Hi, I was getting a bit sleepy there. I fall foul when I ring this place. Anyway, I'll not keep it on as long as that fella. I'm not worried about the price of drinks, etc., etc. I had on the television the other day, now they're supposed to be spending a lot of money on a man to make it something attractive to people to come to. If you look at the Douglas Promenade on the shore,
yeah,
from Derby Castle right through past the War Memorial, nothing but seaweed. And in my young days, the stones on the shore had a 3-foot drop from the pavement, the walkway, to the beach.
Yeah.
They're now level. And in my day, they used to put planks up to stop the stones from going across the footpath.
I'm just trying to think, Doug, how long is it that they took the groins out?
Oh, God, it took quite a bit long time.
Yeah. And Douglas Council, they employ, don't they still employ the that guy to go up and down in the tractor to get the seaweed out of the way?
Well, as I was put to a farm when I was 9 years of age, and one of my jobs when I was with them, I had to work. It wasn't a holiday, it was a work. I worked on the farm till I was 14, and this time of year, when the seaweed would come in, we had 2 tracklers, 1 tractor, 3 of us, 1 man with dealing with the tractor, and the other 2, me included, with the other fella, filling the trailer up with seaweed. And that went to the farm, and that's where they were getting their fertilizer from.
And did that go straight onto the land, or did it have to rot down?
Put in the butt and let it rot down, and then we'd put it, when we were ready to put the plant in the spuds, etc., etc., that would go in the ridges. But we were weeks hauling seaweed away from Douglas Promenade, but it's never been in the state. Looking at it now, you want to encourage people to come to the Isle of Man, do not go down to Douglas Beach, I'll tell you.
All right. Whose farm was that, Doug?
Hey?
Whose farm was it?
A fella named Willie Kelly, and he had a spud round in Douglas, and it was Ballageroy, St. Mark's.
Good. All right. Thanks, Doug. Thanks for that. We'll pass that on to Douglas Council.
Well, they ought to get out and get off their backsides and look at it. Well, this is on the English television. I'm watching it, and I thought, Peel come, when the adverts come on, at the end, you get a picture of Douglas Quay in Quine's Corner. Looks nice. Peel Promenade and Shore. Looks nice. Then come to Douglas. Oh God, you cut your throat.
All right, Doug, thanks for calling today. We appreciate that. Thanks, Doug. David's on now. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. Just what would be nice, actually, for the Office of Fair Trading, Mr. Wannenberg, who's the chairman there, maybe you should invite him on sometime, because they are responsible for a lot of standards on the island and consumer issues. And that's where, if you had the chairman on and his executive, I suppose, you'd probably get people would get a fair deal of what's actually going on. So I wanted to whinge about, I was listening to the taxi guy yesterday, and I encourage him really to have or take to Timble Day on the 5th an anti-competitive practice, because it's clear to me on the story he was giving out there that the DOI, under the DOI, the buses are giving out or party to an anti-competitive practice against businesses, i.e. the taxi trade itself, the minibus trade, and also Tours Isle of Man. A lot of people forget, if we didn't have Tours Isle of Man for those coaches, a lot of us wouldn't have trips to go out in. And that's where I'm almost certain, I'd love to do it myself, but I'm not in the trade as such. I don't run a taxi. But there's an anti-competitive practice there, because when the guy was saying that they put the buses to the quayside to pick up the tour, the cruise ships, was it tendered? Did the department use its own issues, and did it then contact the bus service to say, look, these people are coming in, there's going to be a couple of hundred of them, can you deal with it, and what's the price? The anti-competitive practice comes in is where it's government fuel, government wages, and you can't compete on a same level. That's the biggest issue, and that's all around the world. We need to look at it, and the guy in the taxis wants to put something to Timold to say that they need an investigation, and ask maybe the chair of the OFT, because they were, in my time, looking at that on a number of issues, anti-competitive practices, and also some other issues as well. But I hope the fella does something about it instead of just sitting back, and people can support him.
Okay, I appreciate that. See, David, thanks for calling today. Bonzo's on Man in Line now. Hi, Bonzo.
Oh, hi, yes. I was just, Andy, about to talk about the airport, but just responding very quickly to David, because competition policy was one of my trades in Whitehall. And thinking about the issues with the buses and taxis, etc., I'm not quite sure how the new Competition Act, which was passed in the previous session of Timor, I'm not quite sure how that will affect. But there are usually exemptions for state bodies and government bodies in terms of the things that they do and whether those things that they do are anti-competitive in some way into the private sector.
How do the exemptions work?
Well, those exemptions will be specified in various acts.
Right.
Whether it's specified in the new Competition Act or not, I don't know. But of course, we are in a very peculiar position in that we're a very small place where a lot of things are operated by government. So again, the taking the law as you would have it in UK and kind of mirroring it, and a lot of the Competition Act, as I recall, the new Manx Competition Act, a lot of that is to do actually with very big companies and mirroring the kind of treatment that you have of very big companies that might be headquartered in the Isle of Man for tax reasons, etc. How that then, as I say, might influence on our particular situation isn't clear. And I think one of the things that there needs to be is very much a reform of the Office of Fair Trading, because the Office of Fair Trading does something that national governments don't normally do, or our Office of Fair Trading. Once upon a time, of course, still, there is the UK Office of Fair Trading, which operates in conjunction with the department, now they call it of business, BEIS, whatever the DTI's name is now this week. And that operates on fairly big stuff. But local stuff is done by trading standards officers,
okay,
who operate under local authorities.
Yeah, right.
And the OFT here operates very much more like a trading standards authority in a, local council, it's council, county council or some such,
okay,
in the UK.
But that wasn't why you called.
No, it wasn't. About the airport.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, one of the things about, talking about the approach lighting, etc. Well, of course, commercial pilots operate with what are called minima. They have a variety of ratings, so a variety of classifications which they obtain so that they can fly on instruments in certain conditions and then be able to take a particular aircraft in on an approach at a certain visibility forward and a certain visibility height below them. And that's not only the rating for them, it's a rating for the airport as well, because of course you've got the you have to have various aids such as the appropriate approach lights and such. Now typically I think the absolute minimum for that is something like 500 feet and 1,000 meters, but don't quote me on that. I'd have to go back and look at that, which if you're approaching with an Airbus isn't that much. So You've got to actually have all those things there, which of course is why I think the minima of how far you're able to see down below and how far you're able to see ahead are higher for Rollsway, which then means, of course, with all the bad weather that we have and all the clag that we have, people can't fly in. There's also the question about the weight of the aircraft on landing. Not the takeoff weight isn't really such an issue here because the aeroplanes have got loads and loads of power. So as you can hear, when they take off, they can definitely take off completely full, no problem. The thing is, when the thing lands, because its maximum, we have the A319. I think it's typically the Airbus that EasyJet comes in, which is a kind of slightly jimbo version of the 320. Now, you look at it, and it looks a bit shorter. Yeah, there's been, I think it takes about 30 fewer passengers, 40 fewer passengers. But still, that has a maximum landing weight of 62.5 tons. Now, I'm afraid my meager O-level physics and maths isn't quite up to calculating what the force is on the runway of something approaching, hitting the runway at something like 120, 130 miles an hour, that might weigh as much as 62.5 tons. But it's going to, if you keep doing it, because pilots are quite accurate flyers, it will mostly hit the runway at around the same place. It's going to start to make a dent fairly quickly.
So what do you think is going to happen now at the airport, Bonzo?
Well, I think there needs to be certainly a top-down review of management. Not review. I think we've had too many reviews, enough reviews to build a mountain with. I think we need action and very rapid action on doing things like improving those facilities to allow approaches in the kind of conditions that we get, and also thoughts about the maintenance of the runway, because I believe that actually on the runway extension, the actual sort of hardcore basis of the runway not quite adequate, which again leads to the runway wear problem.
Well, we'll see what the new airport director has to say, and let's hope it's not another report.
Yes, let's hope not.
Okay, thanks, Bonzo.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate it. If you're driving across the Isle of Man, you'll be very well aware of the rise in the cost of fuel. So how are prices set for fuel on the Isle of Man? And is TT going to make an impact on the prices? And by impact, I mean go up. Now, the chief exec of Manx Petroleum is Rob Gelder. And he's talking about why the cost is currently high.
There's a little bit of a perfect storm situation since 2021 when global restrictions due to COVID were released. That resulted in a huge spike in demand for oil and oil products across the world, which couldn't be matched by an increase in supply. Then, of course, we've had the tragic situation in the Ukraine and the resulting sanctions on Russia. So that's resulted in fewer vessels being able to supply fuel and also the sanctions themselves on Russia. So that's increased the demand and a reduction in supply and the resulting increase in fuel prices.
Here on the Isle of Man, why might it be that you can have two petrol stations on the same road that might have differing prices? How does that work?
That's purely down to the fact that ourselves and other suppliers on the island only need to get fresh stocks every 4 to 5 weeks. So if we buy petrol products, diesel, last week, that's the price we pay. Last week, our competitors and our other suppliers on the island might need fresh stocks 2 or 3 weeks prior to that. They'll have to buy it at those prices prevailing at the time. It's purely the infrequency that the island's suppliers are taking in fresh stock.
Does TT have an impact on fuel prices? Obviously, we see so many more people coming to the island, and particularly a lot of motorbikes, so presumably a lot more fuel is used within those 2 weeks than we'd normally see on the island. But does that have an impact on the prices here?
Absolutely not, no. There is a misconception on the island amongst some of the public that there is profiteering due to an increase in demand of road fuel products, but we do not change our pricing model. I'm confident that other suppliers on the island also don't change their pricing model. It would be counterproductive. So it is a fallacy. Any price increase is purely down to the fact that the global price for a barrel of oil had changed at around the time that suppliers had to buy it. The OFT produce data, and I'm confident that that supports my understanding that just as frequently as prices go up for TT, they've also gone down.
That's Rob Gelder, Chief Exec of Manx Petroleums. And a note in from Dave, who said if Liz thinks prices are high on the Isle of Man, she should go to Ireland, they're astronomical.
Out there shopping? Try not to catch the coughs, colds and any of the other nasties around. Come to ShopRite. We haven't dropped our defences an inch. It still screens at the checkouts, extra space, sanitising stations and deep cleaning in every store. Masks? Fine by us. We promise you won't be on your own. Get the safer shopping feeling at your nearest ShopRite. Proudly locally owned.
Rex Motor Company, or should I now say, the award-winning Rex Motor Company, are here for leasing, sales and servicing of some of the best cars money can buy. We're the first motor dealer to win an Isle of Man Award for excellence thanks to our excellent customer service, and you can expect that every time you come and see us. Our friendly showroom team are on Whitehoe Industrial Estate, so come and have a browse of our top-of-the-range vehicles. Or visit rexmotorcompany.im and have a browse at home. That's rexmotorcompany.im.
Are you worried about what inflation is doing to your savings? Chase Wealth Solutions are holding seminars across the island, talking about the current economic climate, offering guidance on how to navigate it, and how a well-known and widely diversified investment solution may help during these difficult times. We're in Port Erin, Ramsey and Douglas on Thursday the 19th, and Peel on Friday the 20th of May. To find out more, visit chasewealth.im. Chase Financial Services, trading as Chase Wealth Solutions, is regulated by the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
Registration is now open for the Buchan School and King William's College. Come and discover how your child can enjoy the perfect start at the Buchan and then benefit from academic excellence to achieve their full potential at King William's College. With average class sizes of 13, superb extracurricular activities and individual support, it's an outstanding island education for your child's global future. So call 820110 to arrange your visit.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Carol with us. Hi, Carol.
I've nearly forgotten what I was going to come on for, but never mind. I had a visitor over at the weekend, and they went down the promenade, and on Sunday, they went down on Sunday, and the cafe under the Villa Marina, it was packed. It was packed inside and out. It was packed because it's very popular there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And on Monday, it was closed, and we had a cruise ship in. Now, that's the only place, really, what you could say is a nice place to sit and look out at sea. So I just don't know why. Why don't they stagger the...
Did it say anything on the door or anything as to why it was closed?
No.
It was just closed on a Monday?
It was closed on Monday, yes. Yeah. And it was packed. It was packed out on the Sunday.
You had a visitor over, did you say, Carol?
I did, yes.
Okay. Yes. And what sort of stuff did you take him around to see on the island?
Well, I didn't go. My partner took him. They went to various places. You know, he's only been once before, and it was.
Yeah, I'm just interested to know what his view was of. I mean, if it's the first time you say he's been, what his view of the Isle of Man was.
No, it was the second time.
I'm just interested to know what his view was of the island.
Oh, he likes the island. Yeah, he likes the island very much. Yeah, like where they went, it was fine. It was just the cafe. We couldn't you know, he couldn't believe that it was closed.
I'm trying to think. I mean, from one end of the promenade to the other, where can you sit outside and have a cup of tea? I think that's about it, isn't it?
Well, I think it's the Queen's Prom, the ice cream shop, I think.
Yeah, but can you sit outside there and have a cup of tea?
Well, you can sit outside and have an ice cream. I don't know whether you can have a cup of tea or not. But, like, under the Villa Marina, it's lovely. And you'd think they'd think about things like this now, wouldn't you, this time of year?
Well, they've got a strategy to get 500,000 people over. Presumably that'll include opening the cafes.
Well, this is it, yeah.
All right, Carol, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right, good to talk to you. Liz is with us. Hi, Liz.
Hello. That gentleman that's just been on a little while ago and said, tell Liz the price of in Ireland is expensive. I found it very reasonable to shop in Ireland.
In the Republic?
Because you have plenty of competition. You have the likes of Aldi and Lidl, and they're everywhere, so they are. So all the other shops, like Right Price and stuff like that, they are really cheap. Some shops are there, yes, but the majority, at least you have the choice. Over here, we don't have, well, we have Tesco's, Shoprite, the Co-op, and Marks's, and that's about the main ones, isn't it, really?
It's not cheap in Dublin, though, is it?
Well, I wasn't in Dublin, I was in Dundalk, which is sort of like heading towards the north.
Yes. Yeah, the beautiful town of Dundalk.
Dundalk, yes, I was in Dundalk. And you see, a lot of people from Dundalk have the choice of going down to Newry and shopping. And sometimes they will give them pound for punt, you know. Well, euro now, isn't it? Sometimes they'll do one for one. But, I mean, the exchange rate isn't too bad, so it isn't. But there is so much choice over there. You have so many of the big stores like you have in Dundalk. It's really a very large industrial town and always has been. I think it's about the largest industrial town in Ireland, actually, Dundalk is. Anyway, I do find it a lot cheaper over there to shop, even in Tesco's over there in comparison to Tesco's over here.
Okay.
I did bring myself back some nice Irish butter, which was only €2.99 for a big pound package, you know, whereas over here you're paying about €2.50 for a half a pound.
All right. Okay, all right.
Yeah, cup of butter.
Appreciate that. Ciao. Thanks for calling today. A note in just to say the cafe's always closed on a Monday, apparently. A message in from, this is Texter 284. Good afternoon. The Dr. Ranson stories made national headlines, UK headlines. Mr. Cannon's statement says, lays the blame on the government HR department, says this Texter. Is that true? The tribunal clearly says the failings are with the former health minister and the director of public health. We'll have to see where that leads us and what's going to happen. And some lots of messages in today. Profit depends on volume, says Des. The brewery should take note of that. Profit depends on volume. That's always the case in talking about rising prices and talking about prices indeed on the Isle of Man, just in general. They say 17% rise, a 17% lift on any price elsewhere simply because of haulage costs. We only have 80-odd thousand people on the Isle of Man, so anybody who's setting up a business has got to cater for that number of people and variations of it. It's often said, I've heard people in the restaurant trade say, in the winter, on a Friday night, there are only 300 people who go out for a meal on a Friday night. 300 people out of 80-odd thousand people, and you have to cater for something like that. So prices will be reflected accordingly. And the story of this 10-year strategy aimed at attracting 500,000 visitors on the Isle of Man has been endorsed by Timwald. There's a 7-point plan committing the Department of Enterprise to providing an annual progress report, another report. Rob Callister, MHK, is responsible for tourism. And he has the lowdown on it.
Yes, I do think it's a very ambitious scheme. I think it's great to have the full support of Timwald members. It's the first tourism strategy that's gone before the court since 2004. It is ambitious, but I think it's an achievable target. But that's why it's a 10-year strategy. It gives us time to regroup, to rebuild, and then to focus on laying down the foundations for a real successful tourism sector over the next 10 years.
The overwhelming thing that came up in the debate, there was obviously great support for what you're trying to do, but the problem seems to be the cost of getting to and from the island, both air and sea.
I think, yes, absolutely right. And I think as we come out of COVID-19, the costs are going to be high. We need to work through that. I think we definitely would welcome a review of our Open Skies policy to make sure that we've got regularity of our flights, to make sure that when our tourists need them, when businesses need them. But from the back of that, then to look at the cost, to try and find ways to make the Isle of Man competitive. As I mentioned in my speech, the UK is now, its own tourism market has grown. So the Isle of Man is the perfect position for an eco destination, to capture some of that destination and to attract people over. But to achieve that, we've got to add additional routes, and we've got to add to make sure that we are very much cost sensitive when we're using our boats and our airlines to come to the Isle of Man.
Been a lot of criticism of late of the state of the island in many respects. Criticism that there's been a lack of pride in what we offer. Also that footpaths aren't being restored and repaired. These are all issues that must be addressed.
Absolutely agreed. I think there's some people have highlighted some major concerns, and I absolutely support them highlighting that. I think local authorities have a responsibility. I think government has a responsibility. And I think we all have a responsibility to keep our island absolutely looking pristine for our visitors, but also taking care and pride in our island, but also taking the opportunity to speak about our island, all the positive things that we have. We've got an amazing island that we all live and we share and we use every day. I think it's absolutely right that everybody helps promote the island over the next 10 years.
Rob Callister there, and where do we go with that? How do we address all those things that aren't right at the moment? Which fences do we repair? Which surfaces do we make sure are painted? Which signs do you think we should replace that we can actually see? Well, somebody's got to start somewhere. And if you've got a thought on the matter, then please get in touch. Andrew's next on Manx Radio. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there. Good day to you. Good day, listeners. Apologies if you hear horses in the background. It's likely to be a gypsy cart going down the road here in Transylvania. I was wondering if you'd seen, Andy, the clip yesterday that's on social media of the Tynwald sitting, where one of the members was asking about press freedom, following on from comments made by former news editor Mr. Tim Glover.
Yes, go on, yeah.
And a question was asked regarding press freedom, and the member was effectively silenced, put down by Mr. Speaker. Did you see that? Did you hear it?
I didn't hear that specific thing, but we've had lots of people comment on the fact they thought Mr. Skelly's tone was rather sharp, but presumably he was doing his job as the president, because remember there is 5 weeks, if you're talking about the Ranson case, there's still five weeks to go go on then.
It was a general question about freedom of the press.
Oh, sorry, forgive me then. Sorry, just tell us more then.
And had, following up from what Tim Glover had been saying, about intrusion into press freedom and the reporting by such as your good selves of certain matters. And the member was certainly put down and silenced by the speaker. And I'm actually a bit disappointed. And I'm wondering, has that situation happened today? Because you've not reported it. And I'm wondering, have you been lent on by somebody within government not to report the fact that a question about press freedom has been silenced?
No, a simple answer to that, no.
So it's very disappointing then, isn't it, that Mr. Speaker can silence questions about press freedom?
Okay, well, I'm not entirely sure what you're talking about, but I'll certainly find out more about that when, and presumably the newsroom will get on to that. Specifically, what was he talking about?
No, there was a question from one of the members following up on what Mr. Tim Glover had said about intrusion into press freedom. And so the member was asking if an inquiry could be made as to was this in fact true. And Mr. Speaker put it down.
All right. Okay. Okay. Well, I'll certainly look at that again, Andrew. But I mean, the thing is that government interfering in media is often it makes a great story. I can tell you, as far as Manx Radio, that doesn't really happen. Not to say that we don't receive, and certainly with the stories we've broken in the past, government hasn't liked what's been said or hasn't liked the tone or the content of some things. But obviously, it's our job to report facts. And we report facts. That's all there is to it. The fact that some people within government or other companies don't like what's said, that's neither here nor there. A fact is a fact. I mean, we get criticised often all the time for reporting stuff that's in the public domain. It just happens that we've got the biggest microphone and the biggest megaphone and people hear it more. But lots of the stuff you hear is in the public domain. It's just that most people don't take the trouble to find it.
Indeed, that's true. But so I'm hoping actually somebody might follow up on I'm pretty sure it's already been covered by your good selves, that what Tim had said about intrusion into press freedom. But I was just feeling a little bit disappointed that this morning no mention had been made of it in what had happened in Tynwald yesterday.
OK, well, there's an open invitation for that fine editor of Isle-of-Man newspapers, Richard Butt, if Richard ever wants to plead his case on Manyline. There's an open microphone for him.
All righty. Take care now.
Have a good day today in Transylvania. Thanks for calling.
You want how much? 1% commission? That's £2,000 to sell my house. That's it. I'm seeing red.
Sick of huge commission fees? Don't get mad. See red. With CG Red, the new service from Cowley Groves, you can sell any house up to £350,000 for a fixed £750 fee. That's a saving of up to £2,750 on what you'd pay with a traditional estate agent.
So go on, see red. Visit cgred.im. They're giving other estate agents a darn good thrashing.
You see us at festivals. You see us at the races. You see us everywhere. Because we are St John Ambulance and we are proud to be a Manx charity. St John Ambulance volunteers help the people of the island when they need them the most. That's why all profits made from our commercial training go straight back into supporting our volunteers and providing opportunities for children from 5 years old to develop life-saving skills. For more information on how you can help, call 674 387.
There's only one name you need when it comes to scrap. Castain Scrap Metal. Castain will scrap all metal and they're licensed to scrap all batteries, including dry cell and lead acid batteries. To get the best prices of copper, lead, aluminium, catalytic converters, brass and more, remember one name, Castain Scrap Metal. Castain Scrap Metal. Remember one number, 801337. 801337. Castain Scrap Metal.
For Kawasaki, it has to be Jason Griffiths Motorcycles. See the range, including the all-new Kawasaki Z650 RS, combining retro style with modern sports technology, plus the limited edition 50th anniversary Z models, and a great selection of quality used bikes, along with Shoei helmets and Revit clothing. Call 825-940 or visit Jason Griffiths Motorcycles on Balfane Industrial Estate, Balasala. Jason Griffiths for Kawasaki. Let the good times roll.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
5-1, Juan's with us. Hi, Juan.
Intrusion of press freedom. Who would have ever guessed that, Andrew?
Imagine that.
You know what? They've got some really nice sharp LED lights down in Deals for £1.20. Do you think they'd go on the end of the airport and make it a bit safer? I mean, we're going to have a tight budget coming up soon, so maybe we could get a couple of dwarfs down there flashing them at night time.
You can't say that.
I can't. Vertically challenged people. I've got 90 seconds. That's all I've got. They're talking about tourism, and that's achievable, isn't it? 180,000 more people, and they're going over 10 years. And I suppose that's probably in line with trying to make people travel around the world less and the big green agenda. So they're obviously going in line with trying to get places nearer home for people to holiday. So, the Isle of Man has got the uniqueness about it. We could go back to where we came from. Look forward to looking back, is what I said a few months ago.
It'll be interesting to see how they can get another 180,000. And who exactly are we going to be? Who will we compete with for that 180,000? Do you think it's Snowdonia or the Lake District or Blackpool or where?
Well, we've only got heritage, haven't we? We've got to look after that heritage. Maybe a centre parks or something like that. Nice to see paddleboarding out there and all these other little things that's going on. So maybe maybe that type of holiday that can get families here, centre parks type of holiday.
OK, got to go, Joe, and have a lovely day.
See you, Andy.
All right. Tomorrow, Manx Radio will be live. The Man in Line's going to be live on Ramsey Pier. The part-renovated Ramsey Pier will be getting to the bottom of everything that's happening there. And also other stuff from the north of the island with the commissioners and the Restoration Trust and what have you. And also I think Marlene Masker's going to be there. Some great memories of Ramsey, the Chamber of Commerce. So that's it. Thanks to producer Barry Redfern today. May your toilet rolls be fairly priced. That's all I'll say. Back tomorrow live at Ramsey. Have a good day.
WINT